According to the United Network for Organ Sharing, 2020 was the 10th consecutive record-breaking year of organ transplants, with almost 40,000 transplants being performed in the United States. That said, the need for organ donors is still immense. More than 6,500 candidates, almost an average of 18 per day, die on the wait list or within 30 days of leaving the list for personal or medical reasons without receiving an organ transplant. The good news is that one organ donor can save up to 8 lives, and every 9 minutes, another person is added to the National Organ Transplant Waiting List. In 2021, more than 40,000 transplants have been exceeded for the first time ever. Annual records were set for kidney, liver, and heart transplants, and the most common of all organ transplants is the kidney. Here's the thing. We know that people who go into getting organ transplants have a stressful road ahead of them that requires a multidisciplinary team to help them prepare for and recover from transplant surgery. My guest today is a registered nurse who worked for 35 years in organ transplantation. While we talk about organ transplants, we primarily talk about how do we effectively prepare ourselves to be a patient within a complex system of organ transplantation, and how do we effectively prevent burnout in our healthcare clinicians who are working in a demanding and high-pressure environment that is often very emotionally intense. Burnout is real, and we need to ensure that not just our patients, but also our clinicians are not marked by emotional exhaustion, depersonalization, and a lack of a sense of personal accomplishments. It's time for us to address how do we prepare not only our bodies, but also our mind to go through a hugely transformative surgery such as organ transplant. This is The Lindsay Elmore Show. Welcome to The Lindsay Elmore Show, a podcast for people who deserve to be healthy, with honest, open, and enlightening conversations with doctors, thought leaders, creatives, and spiritual gurus. You'll walk away with simple and tangible tips and tricks that allow you to live your healthiest life so you can pursue your dreams, overcome obstacles, and leave your mark. Amy Peel is a registered nurse as well as the award-winning best-selling author of Cut and Match: Medical Mysteries with a Mission and a Side of Humor. Before becoming a writer, Amy enjoyed a fascinating 35-year career in the organ transplant field, which provides an authentic backdrop to her books. As director of clinical operations at the University of California, San Francisco, Amy oversaw a team that successfully completed about 600 transplants every single year. She learned early on in her medical career that humor is an important survival skill, and studied improvisation at the world's premier improv school, Second City, in Chicago. Amy is an accomplished speaker who regularly presents to prestigious U.S. medical centers such as NYU, the University of Chicago, the University of Michigan, and UCLA. She tells her audiences, "I kill people I didn't like at work and use their organs for transplant. Why waste the kill?" In her writing, of course. She is also a certified Chopra yoga instructor who has been known to infuse her presentations with chair yoga, which people need more than ever while working remotely. Match, Amy's latest book, is a page-turning thriller that takes the reader into the vivid and dramatic world of kidney transplantation. Amy expertly weaves politics, living donor kidney transplants, and the opioid crisis into this fast-paced, non-stop adventure. Her book, Cut, received many awards, including the 2017 Independent Press Award, a Pinnacle Book Achievement Award, and was a finalist in the 2017 International Book Awards. Amy resides in San Francisco, very close to the Golden Gate Bridge. Amy Peel, welcome to the Lindsay Elmore Show.
Well, thanks for having me, Lindsay Elmore. I'm excited to be here, and I'm excited to talk about a lot of things.
I know. I'm excited to be talking to a fellow UCSFer. Shout out to my alma mater. I loved my days attending UCSF, and when I heard that you had worked for the Director of Clinical Operations at UCSF, where you oversaw and completed more than 600 organ transplants every single year. I know for me, when I think of an organ transplant, that sounds like a major operation, a very serious operation. And to me, it almost feels more than, like, I had an ACL repair back in the day. It seems like more than orthopedic surgery. It seems like, you know, it sounds very scary. So talk to us first just about the current state of affairs of what it means to go through an organ transplant.
Well, sure, I will. And it, from the outside, I'm sure it does. I had a 35-year career in transplant, so I kind of lived and breathed it. And I'll just say, anyone who's listening, know that we all think of transplant as a team sport, that you cannot ever do it alone. There's surgeons, physicians, social workers, financial counselors. We all sit in a room and decide who gets on the list and who doesn't, because at the end of the day, it's a gift of life whenever we get any kind of organ, whether it's a living donor kidney or a living liver or from a deceased donor, heart, lungs. We have to be good shepherds of those organs. So I always ask everyone to please sign their organ donor card, or if you don't want to, tell your loved ones. Just, that's really important. They will be asked. And then we make sure we pick the best recipients to receive whatever organ that is. So I was director of clinical operations for all of the kidney, livers, hearts, lungs, all the organs above and below the diaphragm. And it was a huge team. We had about 120 people working in addition to all the physicians. So it's a well-oiled machine, especially at our alma mater at UCSF, because you've got the smartest of the smartest all in a room talking about every single person who's going to either donate or receive. So I think just a deep breath for your listeners to know, when they go there, and their navigator will likely always be a transplant coordinator. And so there's always someone to shepherd them through. I would also say that right now, because of the organ shortage, we have maybe 18 to 20 people die a day on the wait list in the United States. So that's why we have to push more for living donor kidney and living donor liver transplants, so that we can at least, if there's folks that will donate. And that's becoming bigger and bigger. And we can talk about that later if you'd like. However, the team is there, the science is evolving. And when the actual transplant occurs, people always think, oh, they have to take my old kidneys out and put my new ones in. That's not the case. So they actually put the kidney on the iliac crest, iliac fossa, right in the front of the, on the side of your abdomen, if you will. People aren't too clinically, you know,
kind of right in your pelvis range.
Right. You don't need to take the kidneys out unless there's uncontrollable hypertension or polycystic kidney disease that causes infection. But of course, with the liver, the heart, the lungs, the old organs that aren't working are removed and the new one is put in. And then there's the immunosuppressive drugs, which you probably know a lot about. And then they get recovered. So the kidney transplant patients would go home like in 3 days, maybe. Mm-hmm. Just because it's a pretty easy procedure. And at UC, we did about 350, 400 kidneys a year transplants. So there is just a really strong infrastructure, patient-focused care, family care to hold these people who it walking and going, I'm going to get a transplant. So the good news is hopefully you don't need one and you take good care of yourself and you're healthy. Mm-hmm. So that's part of it. I know I've written 3 books now that are murder mysteries that are about transplant, but people who read them say they feel like they got a peek behind the curtain, because the first one was cut, which is, can you buy your way to a liver transplant list, up the list. The second one, Match, came out and is winning awards. And that's about kidney transplants, paired exchange, the opioid crisis, which is real. We get 30% of our donors currently from opioid overdoses in the United
States. Wow, that's terrifying.
Yes, it is. The books, because I was in the clinical arena, just like if you had written a book about pharmaceuticals, you know it because you know it. So that's a backdrop. But I've had patients and people who've read it and go, oh, I didn't know, or that's good to know. My point about Match, the second book, is that as I did the research and dropped my characters in the world I was familiar with, the Kidney Foundation has a pretty cool, really quick, like 3-minute questionnaire if you go right to a National Kidney Foundation to see if you even have any kidney issues. It's really a simple screening test. So I put that in the back of the book, but anybody listening who is concerned about their kidneys, just go right to the Kidney Foundation, National Kidney Foundation. They are a wealth of knowledge. Mm-hmm. So of course, you and I know we would like to prevent end-stage organ failure whenever possible and manage that disease if and when it happens. And then if patients are referred by usually their specialists, nephrologists, pulmonologists, hepatologists, then they enter this arena and it can be scary. And the good news is there's lots of good patient education and family education to get folks prepared and feel comfortable so they kind of know. So I hope mm-hmm. that's kind of a little, kind of an aerial shot of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I was wondering when the pharmacist was going to come into play, because the medications are absolutely critically important, and conveying that to the patients about, like, this is probably going to be medication for life in most situations. And so I'm going to come back to the organ shortage later, because I assume there's like a, well, because of COVID and we've just had lapses in overall medical care is a piece of that. But let's talk more about that in a bit. But I'd love to talk about what you ended with, about we always want to avoid end-stage organ failure. What are some of the bad habits that patients have that are lifestyle modifiers, things that we can actively seek to change in ourselves so that we don't end up with an end-stage organ disease?
Well, a couple things. You know, diabetes is a scary, you know, either if it's, you know, whatever type 1, type 2, because in type 1, people tend to be born with. Can culminate in organ failure. So if you're diabetic, manage it as best you can. You can be a strong, healthy diabetic. And that really helps, maybe not proceeding to end-stage kidney failure. Type 2 diabetes, as you know, is on the rise in the United States. Again, trying to manage that. And if you are seeing your doctor regularly once a year, get your A1C checked. You know, you get a fasting blood sugar, but get your A1C checked, and if it's in your family. So managing and doing preventive things like an annual checkup, what's your blood pressure? Even if you don't like to go to the doctor, go to Walgreens and stick your arm in that, you know, or CVS, that blood pressure thing, just to know. Look around you in your family, your mom, your dad, your aunts, your uncles, your grandparents, they have any, you know, issues or diseases. But primarily good self-care, getting some good exercise, you know, breathing, taking deep breaths, stress, as we know, you know, can just really pound down your immune system and your body. And some people are on this, you know, treadmill. I know I was for a very long time. I don't even think I was in my body. I was dragging my body 12, 15 hours a day. So I think finding a couple simple habits for yourself, it's a gift to you. I've been speaking at national meetings, and it turns out, because I teach chair yoga, I got certified to teach yoga at the Chopra Center in 2016 after I retired. People really want that 1, 2, 3. They won't give themselves more than 3 minutes usually, because you know you got to go to work. And you've been to UCSF. You know when you're there working hard.
Oh yeah, you don't. That hospital does not play. Does not play.
And as in that world is, it's like a plane in flight for the transplant world and many others, because we don't land. Organ becomes available, recipient is called, the transplant take. And if we're doing that many, you know that that has got to be the finely tuned machine that I referenced. So I always encourage people to take some deep breaths. I teach a little belly breathing. I know this might sound silly, but a little belly breathing. And then maybe a little stretching in a chair. And then I also do a little hand yoga, because people are like hunched over all day, either on their social media stuff or that. So I actually get people to peel their shoulders off of their ears. Mine were like way up here when I was working at UC. And my physical therapist took 2 months to bring them back down. Turns out I have a neck. So being aware, and you know, we all have to get to work and then get home. I always say, take that little minute in the car, even if you're just holding on to your steering wheel, you're parked, you know, you got to get out, and just closing your eyes and just take 3 breaths. I mean, it'll change your day. And it's a gift to yourself. Or if you're at your desk, and I always encourage people, I had a standing desk back when I worked at UC, and people laughed at me. But as you know, now everyone wants standing desks because, you know, sedentary sitting isn't good. So if you could stand up and take a call instead of sit down. So there's just some self-care things, whether you have a disease or don't have a disease, or you just want to give yourself a little bit of love with some breath and some stretch, you'd be surprised. And even if you get home, house is full of people, kids, family, whatever, if you just stay in the car for a few minutes, they usually leave you alone when you first get to the driveway, has been my experience. And then take a breath and get yourself, take away from what we're all doing. That's good work. And center yourself to go in now to be present to your family and your loved ones. So There's tools that I wished I'd learned when I was working full-time that I know now, like those simple things and other things that make a difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think it's undeniable the power of pausing to take a deep breath. You know, in functional medicine, this is part of the go to it, which is how we approach patient care. And the very first thing, the G in go to it, is gather. And I think for most clinicians, that's like, I got to gather all the information and I got to gather all the patients and like all this. Nope. The gathering is the gathering of self, first, before we start patient interviews and before we start trying to dive into it. Because when medicine is at its best, we are fully engaged, fully focused on the success of our patient. And, you know, you mentioned that diabetes is on the rise. We have talked on this show about how 88% of Americans have at least one marker of cardiometabolic disease. And I don't know that we've ever talked about, like, listeners, have I ever told you that type 1 and type 2 diabetes is, I mean, you're going to have to help me, arguably the leading cause of kidney breakdown and certainly eyesight are two huge major causes of these microvascular complications that happen with diabetes. It's really profound and astonishing. And as you know, listeners, I have encouraged you all the time, don't wait until your A1C is high. I want you to check your fasting insulin every single year so that we can start to prevent diabetes before it actually happens. And so talk to us a little bit more about, you were in a very intense career. And you said a moment ago that you didn't have a ton of tools in your tool belt. Right now, especially, it is gravely concerning just how burned out nurses, pharmacists, physicians are. What do we do to take care of ourselves in all kinds of stressful professions?
Oh, that's such a good question. I mean, I you hit the nail on the head. I think one thing is to find some time that you can connect with yourself. So I meditate every morning. And I did meditate even when I was working. There was free, always free meditations. I do the Chopra app, but there's tons online of free that there's even like a 3 minute, a 4 minute, you know, if your time is just, I've got to get here, I got to run the show, that's what I got to do. You got it. I would say first treat yourself like your own best friend. Like if you were my best friend and I saw you stressed, I'd say, okay, Lindsay, just a minute. How about I call you in the morning and we just meditate together. I'll just say, okay, I'm going to call you at 6 because I know you have to be at work. We'll do like a 5 minute one. And then we'll get off the phone. So you get an accountability partner to, instead of you going, I'm glad I don't have to see Amy today because, you know, I got to go. We could partner with each other. So simple meditation. And you don't even have to get out of bed. If you don't want to get out of bed because you're too tired from the night working all day and then couldn't, you can just do something that calms the mind, your mind, so that you can be more present both to yourself and in the caregiving field. We all know we're better caregivers than we are our care receivers. Mm-hmm. So I'd say a little drop of meditation, a little breath, and don't listen to nonstop news on the way to the office. I mean, usually, you know, put on some soothing music or something that makes you happy. I used to have a playlist that I would sing to on the way to the transplant program, you know, when I got towards like right through Golden Gate Park and I was coming down Parnassus. So just things that bring you this joy that aren't going to cost you the time you're worried you don't have, but in your car. And then just breathing, a little meditation and a little stretching, just even a little bit. I do a fun little yoga on YouTube with Claire Diab, D-I-A-B. It's like 15, 20 minutes. And I always say, sometimes, you know, I'm tired in the morning, I do my meditation. I also do a little writing, morning pages, because it's what I do. But I always say, I don't know if I want to do the yoga. And then I always do the get on the ground and floor, you know, and where my yoga stuff is. I always feel better. And it doesn't have to be hard. It's not pretzel yoga, people. It's turning and stretching, right? It's doing some hip rocks, just moving into your body and treating your body like you would if you had to take your car for a tune-up. You know, you have to move your joints. Motion's lotion, right? You want to stretch, all that. You don't have to stand on your head, be a pretzel, or, you know, do a double trip half in the air. I mean, we're not talking about that. I mean, you can if you're flexible, but I teach people who can't get out of their chair yoga, but because I couldn't, I did Iyengar yoga for a long time, got my knees replaced, but now I can get back on the mat. But some people can't get out of it, they can't get up. But you can do all your poses in a chair. So there, all I'd say is the groceries are out there for you. They are free, meaning you can find a simple app, Calm, Chopra, any of those. And if you just schedule it in, I've learned that it's the habit of the habit that works. So if I have a habit of all these things before COVID or all that happened or something sad happens or whatever, the habit that I've already ingrained into getting up and meditating, doing this and that is easier because my neural pathways are already trained to know, okay, it's morning, you know, I've trained myself and I do. And even if I don't feel like it, I know that I feel better. I show up better. I'm a kinder human being to my husband, of course, and the kids, they're grown up. But I think this is like a self-care package that we could tie up and put it on your calendar. Like when I worked at UCSF, I would put a break in the calendar just to breathe, like literally. I touched my shoulders and realized here I was again, because I was, you know, we all disappear into our computers or our smartphones or anything, right? So, I mean, just to notice that I could actually bring my shoulders down, don't even do anything else. You could still read your emails. So just noticing, putting a little stock in yourself, because as caregivers or anybody who's out there who's listening to this, I'm sure they want to care for themselves so they can care for others. Those mm-hmm. are some thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely. There is definite power in making a habit of the habit, like you said. Okay, I kind of want to take you into like a total different direction, but I am fascinated by the fact that you studied improv at Second City in Chicago. That, you know, we're a health and wellness show. We don't talk about humor and comedy that much, but That's legit right there. It is an extraordinarily, arguably the most well-known improv playhouse in the country. And so before we get to the rest of my interview, let's take a break for a word from our sponsors. There are some days where you are just not in the mood. You lack motivation. And when you aren't in a good mood and you lack motivation, you are less likely to get out and exercise, which affects your metabolism. There is a supplement that I love that is specifically designed to put you in a better mood with more motivation and over time support better metabolism. It's called Amare Edge, and it combines three powerful ingredients that have not been used in any other supplement. There is mango leaf, which has fast-acting mental energy that gives you laser-level focus, better clarity, and accelerates learning. It also helps to improve our workouts and our recovery. Lychee fruit decreases fatigue and, over time, improves endurance. It also is a powerful transformer of your metabolism because it can reduce belly fat over time and has anti-aging benefits such as fewer wrinkles and less brown spots. Then we have palm fruit, which synergizes the effect of the mango leaf and the lychee fruit, and it supports the body's ability to regenerate neurons. Between now and April 14th, you can get a free product credit to Get Edge. Head over to lindseyelmore.com/amare and get started as either a customer or a partner with a subscribe and save order of $129.95 or more, and you will get a free $70 product of Edge as well as a free reboot. If you have already shopped with Amare, just use the code MOTIVATION on any $200 or more order. You'll get a free edge when you spend $250 or more. So if you're brand new, head to lindseyelmore.com/amare. Use the code EDGE on any order over $129.95. And if you have shopped with me before, use the code MOTIVATION to get a free edge and free shipping when you spend $250 or more. And now, let's get back to the show. I'm curious. When you're in medicine, when you're in stressful situations, such as healthcare challenges, emotions can run really high and things can feel very heavy all of the time. How did your acting training help you to become a more nimble communicator? Like, what do you think that we can all learn from improvisation that is really, truly applicable to everyday life?
Well, that is a great question. I love this question because I'm from Chicago. I lived there for 31 years. And my day job was talking to donor families and securing consent if they did consent. And then I'd orchestrate all the events that culminated in ICU, OR, with the donor families, so it was pretty intense. So I realized that I really needed some relief. And I'm from a big family of six, there's six kids in our family. So humor is definitely a refined art, who can be the funniest. And I decided to send myself to Second City has this players workshop. So you go for a year and you learn how to play. So I think we all knew how to play. We were kids. Most of us played. I believe that we still want to play with people. I do, honestly. So clearly I'm not making the surgeon bust a gut in the OR when they're operating. That'd be inappropriate. However, I am been known to make fun of them in front of them because I can impersonate some of them pretty good because it gives a lot of material there. And when I wrote them up in the book, the books, I changed some hair color, did a little sprinkly here or that. I really, and we laughed. We had to, you need the release of laughter. Like I got UCSF, I think you may know, has a laughter yoga certification program. And I went to that because it's called Laughter Yoga. And I just met with the gal. We're going to do the UCSF Alumni Association because they want to learn to laugh, to stretch, to breathe, because it's free. So you actually can sit somewhere, you and I could just start laughing at nothing. Our bodies don't know that our brain knows we didn't hear a joke, but our bodies just feel the laughter and the endorphins. So humor is important. Plus, I'm not afraid to play with people now. And adults, I'll find something. And it might be their desk. It might be, you know, the surgeons and the docs and everybody's so busy all the time. But I would always find something to play with. And we ought, you know, I think we need to learn how to play with each other, especially now. It's so heavy with everything that's going on. And if you aren't comfortable like playing at all, depending on you and I could just go joke around, find a show, you know, a silly sitcom. Like we love Ted Lasso or Everybody Loves Raymond or Mike and Molly or something that has, you don't need a PhD. But you get a chuckle. Your body's like, oh my God, you're laughing. So I think it's a really underrated. And it's what's interesting is I'm being asked now, like by the superintendent of our school, if I could come do laughter yoga for the principals and the teachers. Because what, I mean, my God, those people are on the front line too, right?
Absolutely.
And they're dealing with all kinds of toxic stuff. So I was like, it'd be my honor just to spend a few minutes and have them go inside and have a few laughs and stretch a little bit. And then, you know, put that in your container of this is how I love myself with a little breath stretch and a little humor. So I don't know where I would have been without it. If you want to know the truth, it was a huge, big skill and I loved it. So when I moved out here, we were so busy because when I was in Chicago, the program I was doing, there was like 40 kidneys a year. When I came to UC the first year, we did 250 kidney transplants and there was two coordinators. So needless to say, it was a bit busy, but I'm glad I had the humor because I think it helps round me out. And plus who doesn't like to laugh, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. When I was growing up, I wanted to be an actress and a singer. And my mom, the registered nurse, was like, no, you're going to get a real job. And so because I loved performance so much, I too took tons of acting classes, dance classes, singing classes, improv classes, all the things. And one, it's kind of like the most classic rule in improv. You always answer yes and. You never shut down the other person. And that is such a great skill set just for life, for all of the things. When people tell you, hey, I think we can do this big thing, and you're thinking in your mind, you're like, I don't think they can do that. Like, absolutely not. But the ability to say yes, and I think it might take us 3-4 years to get there. What do you think?
There's a great example. Before I lose it, I'm interrupting you, but I just watched Maria Shriver's Reimagining Aging. It was a 5-day thing, but she had William Shatner on. He's 90. So it's her whole point is we are growing older. How can we reinvent ourselves? And she says to him, she's asking him like, you're 90 years old. You were riding a horse last week. You went up in space. Weren't you scared? And he goes in the camera. He goes, terrified. But he said, I say yes to your point. Yes, he did it. He said yes to it. He was terrified and he lived to tell the tale. So you're right. Yes. And. And it is like, you know, when you're with your partner in improv, whatever they throw you, you go, yeah. And so it's it's a good life skill. You're right. And yes, and it might take 3 years to do X, Y, Z, but you've opened up a whole big opportunity that you might not have done if you just said, I can't do that. Sorry. Thank you very much. No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think it is. One of my favorite books that I was ever recommended to me to read is called What Got You Here Won't Get You There by Marshall Goldsmith. And it's 20 habits that highly successful people have that prevent them from going to the next level. And my corporate communications coach made me go through and identify all of my bad habits in this book. And one of the bad habits that I had was, let me tell you why that won't work. Let me tell you why that won't work, which we say in 10,000 different ways all of the time. You know, I want to go on vacation. Well, let me tell you how that's going to be too expensive. I want to lose 15 pounds. Well, let me tell you why that's going to be hard. I would like to not need a solid organ transplant. Well, that's just, it's unavoidable. You know, and if we just would stop, breathe, find that power of that moment and go, yeah, yeah. And if you prevent your diabetes from getting worse, you'll also reduce your risk of a need for a transplant. Yeah.
One of the docs I worked with at some point says, we talk, he goes, the problem is, and then we did, and the problem is, and I said, do you know, one time I didn't say anything. I just marked how many times they said it. I said, do you know how many times you say the problem is? Can we like use different language like you're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There may be obstacles, problems, whatever, but it doesn't mean they're insurmountable.
Well, you just imagine if the sentence had begun, instead of saying, well, the problem is this, if he or she had said, it sounds like we're going to need to consider how we're going to go over this hurdle, how we're going to do this thing, it's a completely, completely different conversation. It's fascinating to me that after all of your career of helping all these people navigate this very challenging water of organ transplant, what we have just spent the whole time talking about is down-to-earth health, wellness, simple habits that add up over time. How did you get to this point where you began to understand that the mind, the body, the spirit, it all has to be well?
I actually got, I think I put it all together. I think I had pieces of it in my life on occasion. Yes, it's good to exercise. Yes, you can eat healthy. Yes, meditation's good. But when I did retire, I went to the Chopra Center, which isn't there anymore, but in Carlsbad. And it was like a 10-day perfect health. Honestly, didn't know what I was getting myself into, if you want to know the truth. It's probably the best pivotal thing where you talk about mind, body, spirit, and you learn to meditate. And, you know, I did yoga twice a day, but I was in my chair, feeling it, doing good. And then you learn about good eating habits. And then you learn just about connecting to your mind, body, spirit. We're not our body. We have a body. We're not our mind. We have a mind. We have a spirit, a soul too. So it's about just understanding it. And then I read a lot and I was so excited about, you know, Deepak Chopra is pretty smart. He got his MD at Harvard. He's from India. People don't know who he is, but he was a doctor who didn't want to just recommend surgery and pills for people and felt there was more to us, mind, body, spirit. So he imported some things from India that he did, and go figure. He got ridiculed early. And now fast forward where we are today, a major thought leader. So I think that just connecting all those things, and then kind of the scientist in me was like, oh, I'm going to do this for so-and-so and see how it feels. Well, go figure. It feels great. I feel better. It's a more of a healthy, you know, habit for me. So I think all of that is finding that little combination inside of you where you can honor all of it, but not be it. Mm-hmm. You know, you can have an opinion today about something, but you don't have to be the opinion. You know, there's so many things, so many rewiring things on how to reshift things and to get things done in a productive and supportive way, and surround yourself with healthy people. Even if the guys or the gals want to go out happy hour or whatever, maybe there's a couple friends who would love it if you guys just hung out and meditated for 10 or 15 minutes or went for a walk. Nature, just walk out in nature. There's the story. You know, the trees aren't crying. They're not shy. They bloom. They show us their beauty, their flowers. It's all kind of right there. It's not like they're mad at us or don't, you know, I'm not showing you how pretty my flowers today. They're just like, nature teaches us so much. So I think learning about things and then just I try to meditate, you know, twice a day. As Deepak would say, if you don't have time to meditate, you need to meditate for 2 hours. Mm-hmm. I remember just laughing out loud. And I like that he studies quantum physics and a lot of other things that are applicable. But I think for me, the more I move into me, the better I can be for other people. It's true. It's so true. So if I can sprinkle little sound bites or little tiny, even if you're just so compacted and you have to work two jobs, but you take the bus, when you're on that bus, just close your eyes and hold your stomach and breathe. That's all. They'll announce your stop. You probably know what your stop sounds like. But I think giving yourself that respite, I really feel like it's a gift. And to me, what's interesting now is that I'm being asked to speak about this to the scientific community now. And as you know, that wasn't something that you just had a big discussion about in the halls long ago, of breathing and yoga and connection. So I'm happy where we are. It's just the world's so overwhelming. If you can put it on hold, maybe don't watch news at night, give yourself a chuckle, you know, have a play partner, even if you just color in a book that's just like a pencil colored fun, some little thing that brings that child out in you, that brings that little piece of joy that we all had when we were little. We were all making stuff up all the time. And my imagination has only gotten wilder as I've let it out of the corral. And so that's how come I use the writing and just playing with people. So there's lots of things out there. There's lots of free things out there. It doesn't cost anything. And I just encourage people to find that spot in their day, the beginning and maybe at the end. And maybe it's a minute, maybe it's two. You can always set the timer. And if you just do that, you'd be surprised. Lastly, I got those toothbrush at the time, 2 minute timers. And there's times when I'm like, is it over yet? I got to go. And I just said, Amy, it's a 2 minute brushing. It's consciousness, 2 minutes. And I'm like, this is too long. I haven't got 2 minutes to brush my teeth today. And it's like, where are you going? So little things that you are aware of, you have the gift to give yourself. You just have to kind of pry open that window and let it out for a little bit, because believe me, I'll have plenty to give everybody.